Hello and welcome to the live webinar, Norwood and Bic Graphic, Defining Eco-Friendly, sponsored by Norwood and Bic Graphic and powered by Promo Marketing. I'm Nicole Stella, Vice President of Promo Marketing, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also send a question to us via the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelist. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, and you can send them in to us at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on the console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all the widgets on the console do and how you can customize your experience today. Joining us today is Joe Cade, VP and General Counsel of Norwood Bic Graphic. Joe is originally from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where he practiced law for 13 years. He moved to Indianapolis, Indiana in 2004 and practiced law with a private firm before joining Norwood Promotional Products as Senior Vice President and General Counsel in November of 2006. His experience as an attorney is diverse, having represented a number of public and private companies and governmental entities in areas such as oil and gas, regulatory matters, mergers and acquisitions, intellectual property, litigation, business, and real estate transactions, consumer product safety and regulatory compliance, and import-export matters. He is currently VP and General Counsel of Norwood and Bic Graphic, responsibility for all legal matters of Bic Graphic and Norwood on a global basis, including their product safety and regulatory compliance programs. Joe, the floor is yours, and you can take it away.
Thank you, Nikki, and thanks to everyone who's joined today. When I was asked to put together a seminar for today, and it was in September, I thought that this is, in fact, catalog season. We're all getting ready for the January launch of new products, and we're heavily into catalog review. And marketing claims is an area that the legal department looks closely at, and this year we are definitely looking closely at eco claims because those are on the forefront of a lot of marketing promotions. So I'm going to take you to the first slide, and I think the point here is pretty clear. When it comes to an eco claim, we need to be able to pass the red face test, and the red face test is simply to back up your claims and make sure that they're accurate and truthful. So on the next slide, you'll see an agenda. We're going to talk in general about why is this important, how is it enforced, what are the main goals, and then a lot of independent subjects that pertain to eco claims. On the next slide, I think the important part of making sure that we're working with parties in our industry that promote eco-friendly products, that this is important to maintain credibility within our industry. A lot of you work with large brand companies, whether it's Coca-Cola, McDonald's, and others, and they spend millions of dollars a year advertising their eco-friendly programs. And they want to make sure that when they buy promotional products in our industry and that product is claiming an environmentally beneficial component, that it is actually true and supports their program. I think it's important also that we build trust with smaller customers, many of whom are very attuned to eco-friendly matters and consider it very important to promote the proper marketing of products. Our industry's reputation is at stake, and frankly, there's liability if we do the wrong thing. So probably the most important point here is we want to do the right thing. It's good for the industry. It's good for business, and it's just the right thing to do. On the next slide, I think it's important to show who the FTC is. That's the Federal Trade Commission, and their job, amongst many other things, is to prevent false and deceptive advertising. But they also do many things to keep a very competitive and fair business environment such as policing, price fixing, price wars, agreements to restrain trade, monopolies. They also protect consumers individually for fair debt collection practices, and they police telemarketing fraud and abuse. They also have taken a leadership role in combating identity theft and predatory lending. But for our purposes, the Federal Trade Commission is also there to police our marketing claims and our advertising to make sure it's not false and deceptive. Other federal agencies also police marketing claims. The FDA will police marketing claims on sunscreens, over-the-counter drugs, even prescription drugs, food packaging, and cosmetics. Many of you are probably aware that in December, there are going to be some new marketing rules for sunscreens that will be out, and they'll certainly look very closely at those. But also the EPA monitors health claims, especially antibacterial and antimicrobial health claims. And the Department of Agriculture will police organic claims pertaining to products made of textiles derived from agricultural products. So the three pillars of advertising are pretty straightforward. It needs to be truthful and not deceptive. That's key. It could mislead consumers who are acting under reasonable circumstances. One question is it important to the consumer decision to buy or to use the product? It needs to be fair and accurate in that regard. A marketing claim can be expressed, direct statements, or it can be implied between the lines. And lack of information can cause deception, too. So there are many ways to look at this, but it simply comes down to what the consumer believes when reading the marketing claim. Now, advertisers need evidence to back up their claims before the ad runs, and it's important to state before the ad runs. It can't make a claim and then try to back it up later. And in particular, health and safety claims require competent and reliable scientific evidence, a test report in many instances. Many other claims simply need reasonable documentary support to back up that claim. Advertisements cannot be unfair. There can be some unfair claims made that could injure consumers. For example, if an auto company makes a marketing claim that a new brake system on an automobile stops the car 20% sooner than the average brakes, if it does not do that, consumers may not hit the brakes quickly enough and cause an accident. So there's an example of how consumer injury can flow from an unfair or improper claim. And then the question is going to be also, is the unfair ad outweighed by benefit to the consumer? Normally, that's not going to be the case. So what does the Federal Trade Commission target primarily right now on claims? Well, if an ad makes a claim about health and safety, that's critical to the safety of consumers, and they will police those harder than they do other types of claims. For example, a sunscreen reducing the risk of skin cancer. I think everybody that is familiar with the new sunscreen rules understands that claim is not possible anymore as of December unless the product has been tested by a lab and shown to be both UVA and the UVB broad spectrum coverage and to have an SPF value of at least 15 or more. Obviously, a health and safety claim about a dangerous product such as a chainsaw is going to be focused on very closely by the Federal Trade Commission. But they also look heavily at ads that make false claims that a consumer just can't figure out on their own, so they have to take it for granted from the advertiser. For example, if an air conditioner is said to use 25% less energy, there's no way for them to know that, so it needs to be backed up with testing. And also, if a product is made from, for example, 100% recycled plastic, there's no way for a consumer to know if that's true or not, so they will police claims like that more than the average marketing claim. I think everybody's heard the term greenwashing before. Well, this is the actual definition of it, and it's basically making a false eco-benefit claim. It's the act of misleading consumers regarding the environmental practices of a company or the environmental benefits of a product. So that is common terminology now for eco-claims that simply are not accurate. So, what can we use as a supplier in the industry to make sure that our eco-friendly claims are in fact honest and substantiated? Well, the Federal Trade Commission has published information called the Green Guides, and it's basically a guide that will help us understand what they interpret the law to be on environmental marketing claims. So how to word them, how to substantiate them, and many examples of what to do and not to do so as to avoid deceptive marketing practices. I think a lot of people are familiar with the fact that those green guides are being revised very soon. Some of the areas that will be modified is to strengthen rules against general environmental benefit claims and to require more qualifications prominently near an eco claim to limit that claim to the specific benefit the product can provide and has been proven to provide, to require disclosure of advertisers' relationship to a product endorser. So if a company has an endorsement from someone who is a paid consultant, then that disclosure is going to be required. It also requires 100% breakdown of an entire product into elements found in nature within 1 year to be classified as biodegradable, and I'm going to speak more on that later. But biodegradable claims are almost impossible to substantiate, and claims for products that are destined for landfills, incinerators, and recycling facilities, the decomposition is just not going to occur within 1 year in many of those environments. There are going to be also new rules on renewable material claims. So we'll be looking for that within the next few months. So let's take a look at some examples of marketing claims. And I started with a classic one that everyone has seen before. And we need to understand when that can be used and when it can't be used. First and foremost, BPA is a chemical that has been used in plastic in the past, mostly polycarbonate. And that claim needs to be supported by a test report from a third-party lab like Bureau Veritas, SGS, STR, Intertek, some of these companies, that is conducted before the claim is made that shows that there is no bisphenol A detected in the entire product. Okay, you can't make a BPA-free claim for a product that's never had BPA in it. For example, ceramic drinkware has never had BPA as a component, so to make a BPA-free claim on that particular product is misleading and is in violation of the law. Recyclable is an interesting term and sometimes gets confused with recycled content claims. Recyclable means the entire product can be recycled, not just part, because in most cases, if the entire product cannot be separated and recycled and reused, most screening facilities, recycling centers, will not take the product apart and put the recyclable portion in one bin and throw away the rest. So as a general rule, the entire product needs to be recyclable. For example, a pen that has a recyclable portion to it but has many other parts that aren't is likely not going to be separated in the recycling center. So that one is not an appropriate product unless the entire pen, which is normally not going to be the case with an ink cartridge, the entire pen would need to be recyclable. So let's take a look at some classic models. We know of plastic water bottles, and many people are aware of the codes on the bottom of these bottles, 1 through 7, and codes 1 and 2 pertain to PET and HDPE. And those are common plastics used in water bottles, and they are routinely recycled and easily segregated at the recycling center. There's a plastic code 7 that's actually a mixed group of plastics, and that generally is not recyclable because it's not of pure and known content. Also, there are some papers, for example, that can be recycled, newspaper, white copy paper, even a lot of cardboard. But once that paper has been treated with wax and plastic coating, such as papers used for food wrapping, those simply are not recyclable because there's too much waste with that paper to make it recyclable. So let's take a look at claims of a product being made from recycled plastic. It's important to know that there aren't many products that are made from 100% recycled material because most products are made from several different materials. Even water bottles may have a polypropylene cap and a PET bottle. So there needs to be a qualifying statement that a certain part is made from recycled plastic, and normally that part needs to be calculated as a percentage by weight of the material. So, for example, if a pen is made from recycled plastic, normally that claim needs to be that the barrel and clip, for example, are made from, this is just an example, 60% post-consumer recycled plastic. So that's the best way to qualify these claims so we understand what we're actually gaining in the way of an eco-benefit product. Now, the ISO standards do define pre-consumer recycled plastic and post-consumer recycled plastic. Pre-consumer is exactly what you think. It's plastic waste from the manufacturing process that normally would be thrown away, but it is diverted from the solid waste stream, and it is used for manufacturing purposes again. And one of the biggest problems that I've seen is a claim of recycled plastic when, in fact, it's just regrind plastic. And to give you an example, here in Clearwater, the big graphic facilities do mold plastic pen parts, caps, barrels, plugs, and the like. And in our standard process, and in probably 99% of all other plastic molding processes in the United States, if there's excess plastic, it goes into a bin that's automatically put into a grinder and put right back into the equipment, so there's virtually no waste. That is not recycled plastic. It is regrind plastic because it is normally reused in the manufacturing process. Post-consumer recycled plastic has to be something used by the consumer and recovered at a recycling center, for example, segregation center, from the solid waste stream after having been used and thrown away. So examples of some more marketing claims, you may be familiar with what we call the Mobius Loop, and that is a recycling symbol that lets you know that a product has an eco-benefit, and it's really best to show what that benefit is. If you put a 60% in the middle of it, for example, that will explain that the product has 60% recycled content. But there does need to be some sort of qualifying claim in there. Otherwise, the symbol by itself assumes 100% recycled content or 100% recyclable material. So that brings us to our first slide of trivia. And when we talk about the Mobius Loop, we might wonder, well, how was that derived? In 1969, early 1970, there was a tremendous amount of tension on environmental issues that started the first Earth Day. And in response, a company in Chicago, then called Container Corporation of America, now called Smurfit Stone Container, sponsored a contest for art and design students of high schools and colleges across the country to raise awareness of environmental issues. And Gary Anderson, a 23-year-old college student at the University of Southern California, came up with Mobius Loop, and that was the winning design and has turned into a very commonly used design to refer to recyclable or recycled material.
Wow. Joe, I wonder if Gary had any idea that that would be so popular today. I have a couple of quick questions for you
okay.
from, from our attendees out there. One is a great question. It's something that I saw on the news a couple of weeks ago or last week. Concord, Mass. Just passed a law against single-use water bottles. And do you see this as a trend that's going to be increasing in popularity? And how would this affect the promotional products industry as a custom-labeled water bottles? You know, we use them in promotions all the time.
Well, I have to be honest. I'm not aware that the law was passed, and I haven't seen anything that would indicate a trend, but it is an interesting law that is going to spark some debate and discussion. But certainly reusable products, whether they are a reusable plastic water bottle or a reusable grocery tote or something like that, are going to be in higher demand, and they certainly have a much greater value to environmental issues. But I think if you look at how many plastic bottles of water people buy at the grocery store every day and the fact that they've taken great strides to redesign those bottles to use less and less plastic, you can see the tops are much smaller and the bottles are thinner but have designs that will hold them together. I think that's probably going to continue, but that's just a guess on my part.
Okay. And another quick question for you is, as a distributor, is a distributor going to be held responsible for claims, product claims made by industry supplier if they purchase a product that is said to be eco-friendly and it's not really? What's the impact on the distributor?
Well, I think there are two things we need to consider here. First is there legal liability, which I think is really the basis for the question, and I would say likely not unless there is some sort of coordination of effort to defraud, and that's normally just not going to be the case. But I think more importantly is whether or not the distributor is going to maintain a reputation if it works with suppliers that routinely sell products making false environmental claims. And I think that's probably where most of the rubber is going to meet the road. Mm-hmm. But as a lawyer will always say, nobody is free of lawsuits when they're involved in a transaction, and there's always a chance that some distributor might get sued by a large company when there is a false eco product sold to them. So I think there's certainly legal liability to keep in the back of the mind if you're a distributor.
So accuracy in labeling and truth in labeling and all of those things are just wildly important, not only for the distributor to know about and be aware of, but to make sure that their suppliers are also giving them accurate information.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, I'll let you get back to the presentation.
Great, great. So we're looking at the next slide that talks about a marketing claim of 10% less waste. And maybe speaking of the plastic water bottle topic is timely because this where it may be a product where this claim is made. For example, if you buy disposable water at the grocery store, there may very well be a 10% less waste claim on that product because they're redesigning the bottles to use less plastic. That's possible, but it can be ambiguous unless it is clarified because you don't know just by using 10% less waste is your claim if that is referring to the packaging materials, is it referring to the product is 10% less plastic, for example. Are we referring to a competitor's products? So that's another example of when a marketing claim needs to be clarified. So another one, ozone friendly. And this one is a little old in most instances, so we don't see it as often as we did 20 years ago. But this claim can be deceptive unless the product that's being marketed as compared to other comparable competitive products, contain ozone-depleting substances like CFCs and VOCs, or the advertised product contains no chemical that is harmful. Excuse me, and contains no chemical that's harmful to the ozone. So you've got to make this claim against a specified product that does cause problems to the ozone, and your product has to be ozone friendly 100%. So if the product in question has never contained ozone damaging substances, then the claim can't be made because it hasn't been converted into something that is environmentally friendly. For example, let's say a shower soap has never really contained CFCs or VOCs or other ozone damaging constituents. Then you can't say it's ozone friendly because it hasn't been converted to where it is more friendly to the ozone. Okay, bamboo. This is interesting, and it's something that the Federal Trade Commission has made us aware of in recent history. I think we all recognize that, as a general rule, bamboo is a rapidly renewable resource because it's not something like corn where it requires plowing and planting and fertilizing and pesticides and things like this, and it does grow back quickly. So it can be a favorable product in some instances, as long as your product is, in fact, made largely from bamboo, and you designate which portion is, and it is bamboo for, say, a wooden cutting board or some other wooden-type object, then it's probably going to be just fine. But beware of renewable resource claims for textiles made from bamboo, because in many instances that is nothing more than rayon, and rayon is made often from bamboo constituents, but the process to make rayon is very toxic to the environment. So I would steer away from products that make that particular claim for textiles. So here's another important trivial point. Bamboo is actually a grass. It's not a tree. I've got some in my backyard, as a matter of fact, here in Clearwater. Many different species, and obviously you won't expect to find it in Antarctica, but interesting that it is also not found in Europe, just about everywhere else, though. Now, biodegradable is one of my pet peeves when it comes to marketing claims, for good reason. The ability for a product to be truly biodegradable is almost zero under the law. In fact, grass and sticks and leaves are just barely biodegradable under the FTC guidelines because, first of all, you need to have a reliable scientific test that shows that the entire product, or if you're just advertising the package as biodegradable, then the entire package completely breaks down 100%, returns to nature, and becomes basically part of normal soil within a reasonably short period of time after customary disposable. Short period of time is 1 year. Surveys have been made, and the average consumer thinks that 1 year is when something would have to totally convert. So be very careful when I'm marketing a product as biodegradable, because there have been some very deceptive test reports out there that I have seen. And now that the Federal Trade Commission has made the definition almost impossible to meet, even for things that we always thought were biodegradable, it's going to be almost impossible to meet that rule with products in our industry. One reason why this is such a highly policed claim by the FTC is that if someone believes that a product is biodegradable, they're more likely to throw it in a lake, throw it in a river, throw it on the ground, thinking, oh, it's just going to disappear within a year, no big deal, when in fact it does not. So it's deceptive, and it's actually reverse damage to the environment as opposed to partially beneficial. So be careful with this one. And the rules are going to get tighter and tighter. So those claims I'd be shying away from in almost every situation. Compostable really means basically the same thing as biodegradable, and it has to be supported by a scientific test so that the entire product is going to completely break down in a timely manner and be appropriate for a composting program. So if you have a compost pile in your backyard and you throw these products in it, are you going to want to go out there a year later and use it for your garden? I think that's just the common sense analysis of this, and I'd be very careful about products that are advertised as compostable. I will never say never, but most will never meet that definition, and the rules are getting tighter. So there's an interesting piece of trivia here. When we talk about throwing things away that may or may not be biodegradable or compostable, consider this statistic that approximately 4 pounds of garbage are thrown away every day by each person. It's pretty amazing.
And Joe, I have one quick question for you from the crowd out there. You've mentioned on a couple of occasions that you expect that regulations are just going to continue to get tougher. Can you explain how you think that that's going to happen? What type of how will it become more stringent? And what do you think the future looks like in this product category?
Well, I think this product category and these marketing claims are certainly valid in many instances. They're very legitimate and, frankly, support any products that have an environmental benefit as compared to its former product makeup. But the FTC is in their near final draft of the new rules, and they are going to tighten up on the definition of biodegradable and compostable, and they're also going to make sure that there are virtually no general marketing claims where you say directly or indirectly that it has an eco-friendly benefit without coming back in and stating exactly what that benefit is and what it's not. So I don't think the rule tightening is going to hurt us. I think it's going to help us in the long run because most of these claims are very legitimate. So I'm not worried about it. I'm just glad to see more clarification coming through.
Right. So the impact on the industry is not going to be massive. It's just going to be a matter of us tightening up
as
well.
That's correct. It's basically clarifying what the rules already are in many instances. So I think that's going to help more than hurt, and I think it's going to give people like me or guidance when I'm analyzing something to make sure we get it right or we just don't do it.
Right.
So I think it's a positive thing.
Great. Okay.
Okay.
I'll let you get back to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So we talk a lot about sustainable development. It's a concept that's tossed around but maybe not always fully understood, and I thought that I would provide the best definition I've seen, which comes from the United Nations, of what sustainable development really is. And the definition is right there: development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. There are three areas that need to be addressed with this. One is environmental stewardship. I think that's the area we largely think of when we think of sustainable development. That's conserving energy, recycling, using renewable resources and reusable products, and limiting pollution. All of those are classic notions. But also social responsibility, which is something I see as a requirement of many of our end-user customers every week, and that addresses two main areas. One is, are we purchasing products, for example, from a supplier in Asia, and that supplier is following fair labor practices and has a safe work environment. So safe and clean working conditions, paying workers a fair compensation, giving them basic freedoms, not using child labor, not discriminating. BIC is very strong against animal testing and avoiding suppliers that may do that, and creating reasonable working hours. And it's not just something that we focus on in Asia, but it's something we focus on here. We get audited at Norwood and Big Graphic facilities every year several times for all of the same things. And I think that's an important component of sustainable development that is often overlooked. And then certainly sustainable development needs to be economically viable. You know, can you do this in a profitable way? Can you continue to grow? So if it's too restrictive, it won't last. So sustainable development has all three of these characteristics. So we're down to the question and answer session. And I guess I will open the floor for any particular questions that we may not have already addressed.
We did just receive a question from a distributor out there who asked if you could discuss the processes that Norwood Big Graphic has in place to ensure that products are eco-friendly and that, so that when they are making a purchase, they can be rest assured that, that there's no issue there.
Great. Yeah, that's a good question. What normally happens is we get a sample of a product and someone from the global marketing group comes in and they say, we are told we can make this claim by our supplier. And we look at the product, and then there it depends on the type of product. There are some products that are obvious, and you really don't need to spend a lot of time looking into it. For example, if something is solar-powered, I think we all recognize that as having an eco-benefit. So the only thing we need to do is make sure that the solar panel actually works. And if it does, it does, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. So testing of that component is applicable to that situation. Let's say that there is a product that is claimed as made from 50% recycled plastic of some sort. There are a number of different things that we can get, but first and foremost, we will get an affidavit from the supplier on that. We're fortunate that we have about 65 to 70 people throughout Hong Kong and China that visit our factories on a regular basis, and they can go in and inspect and see whether or not there are plastics that normally would be thrown away that are sold to a third party and brought back in to make the product. So we can actually do some on-the-ground inspection to back up an affidavit. Normally I wouldn't rely on an affidavit if there's a question in my mind as to whether or not this supplier follows the proper practice, but an affidavit can be worthwhile in some situations. Sometimes we have to send it to a lab and get it tested to validate. For example, BPA claims, you always have to send that to a third-party lab and test it for BPA, but we won't do that if it's a product that hasn't traditionally had BPA in it. We won't make the claim. For example, the ceramic mug issue. So there's lots of different ways to go, but there is a database that is kept and a spreadsheet that is kept of all of our environmental benefit claims, and we do calculations, for example. A lot of the products made here in Clearwater are from recycled plastic, and we get that from certified suppliers, and we do the actual calculations here so we can make sure that it's 67% recycled plastic or something like that. So it just depends on the circumstances.
And then another distributor asked, in terms of social responsibility, does Norwood have social responsibility documentation that can be shared with their end user clients?
Good question with a complicated answer. As a general rule, let me just talk about our social compliance program, and I'll refer to Asia and our Asian offices, what we do. They've been trained by Intertek, one of the primary audit companies for social compliance, to go in and do detailed audits. One is for social compliance, one is for factory capability, and one is for supply chain security. So it's a very rough couple of days for the plant. And it's a very detailed report, and everything has a point score, and a supplier either passes or fails. It is probably the same type of audit you would get out of any of the major audit companies, but we're fortunate in that we have a team that can do it on the ground. We also hire third parties to do audits, and we do audits of ourselves. Coca-Cola requires an audit every 3 years. McDonald's requires an in-person audit every 3 years. So the answer is, when it comes to a third-party supplier, our policy, which would require a CEO exception to the rule, which is not normal, is that we do not provide copies of our social compliance audits of our third-party suppliers. That's because we want to maintain the privacy of our suppliers. With respect to audits of our facilities, whether it's in Shenzhen, in Tarragona, Spain, Clearwater, Florida, Red Wing, Minnesota, any of these locations. We have audits from Coca-Cola and McDonald's, and about to have them from QCA. And we, under the right set of circumstances, will release those to the end user. We don't make it too difficult with a non-disclosure agreement, but we just want to make sure, since it has employee data and salary ranges and things like that, that it's not something that is on the street, so to speak. So
right.
We can provide that.
Right. Okay. And you talked a little bit about how Norbit Graphic is has a great interest in no animal testing. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Animal testing is pretty rare now. Normally you see it in the pharmaceutical industry and the cosmetic industries and things like that. And we carry a line of cosmetics and over-the-counter drugs, and we simply get an affidavit and oftentimes an inspection of the facility to make sure that testing is not on animals. An interesting point, when you're validating SPF value of sunscreen, for example, the normal test is on human beings. They get a series of different skin type human beings, probably college students, I don't know, and they actually do field testing on humans of that. So it's kind of interesting. We're moving away from animal testing into human testing, but that's a non-invasive test. So we do avoid any supplier that's going to do animal testing. And our cosmetics and over-the-counter drugs are all sourced out of the U.S. from very reputable organizations. I've toured a number of their facilities, and they're very top flight.
Okay. And another question is, I received a distributor received an ad with the Mobius loop with a 5 in the middle and the letters PP underneath it. Would you happen to know what the PP stands for?
Polypropylene, in all likelihood, which is a type of plastic. Mm-hmm. Now, what the 5 means, I don't know unless it was 5%, and it may be that this is not actually the Mobius loop, but the plastic symbol 5 that I don't remember each of the numbers and what plastics they apply to, but my guess is that means that it is polypropylene plastic, and that is, in the plastics industry, plastic number 5.
Okay. I hope that answers the question out there. And then we have a question of, with the state of the economy, buyers are searching more by price, and they're not caring about where the products come from. How can a distributor convince them to pay a little bit more for safety or for a really green product and not one that has a tenuous claim?
Are we talking about a product safety topic or an eco-friendly benefit to a product?
I think we could look at both. I think both information on both sides would be helpful. So we can start with the eco, and then we can talk a little bit about safety as well.
Okay. I think in most instances, a company already wants to get a product that has an environmental benefit quality to it when they're thinking about buying a product. I'm not a salesperson, but my thinking would be they already have that in mind, or they might have it in mind once you introduce the option. And I think most companies realize that in a lot of instances it costs a little bit more to buy recycled pellets to make a plastic product, for example. And I think the question is the added cost going to be correlative to the value add to the environment and to the program of the end user? So I think you need to, if you do your research on your end user customer and they have a strong eco-friendly program and they do advertise it, then in many instances those companies understand that it costs a little bit more to get that product. Now, when we talk about product safety, it's a totally different world. There are two topics under product safety. One is the product going to hurt someone? And number two, is there a law that might be broken with respect to that product? And I think after the last 6 or 8 years, with that being a very important topic out in the forefront, everybody understands that, first of all, we don't want to hurt anybody. And that's why we inspect products physically to see if there's a sharp point or a burr or a sharp edge or a pinch hazard or something along those lines. And then we send the product to a lab to test it for, in large part, chemicals, but it may also be for small parts that could involve a choking hazard. And strong magnets are at the forefront right now. And then, unfortunately, there have been some young children that have died from products that had strong magnets that came off, and the children ate them, and it caused them to attach the walls of the intestines together and kill the child. Our consultant was an expert witness in the trial, so I got more than enough of that. So I would hope that every customer wants to make sure that products are safe, number one, and number two, that they don't violate the law, because usually they're in violation of the law if they're unsafe to the people that are using it, either over a long-term exposure or maybe for an incidental use, such as a folding chair that has a pinch hazard and the chair collapses and cuts off a finger. These things are easy to ignore until you read the stories of them. So I understand some people are going to go straight to price, but ultimately I think legality and safety need to be out there.
And can you talk a little bit about, I don't know if all distributors are understanding their place in terms of liability in the supply chain, whether it be for false advertising or for product safety issues or anything of that nature. Can you talk a little bit about that so that they have a better understanding of what their responsibility is to the end user?
Well, I'll tell you that if there is a case worth filing and it involves a personal injury from a product or something associated with a product safety issue, or even if there is damage to the reputation of a company like Coca-Cola, who has a tremendous brand value, normally what happens, whether it's right in the end, it's what's going to happen on the front, and everybody in the chain of the transaction normally gets sued. It's just, I'm sorry, that's the way lawyers operate in most instances, and they require you to prove that you should get out. And quite often what happens is it's cheaper to pay some money and get out than it is to fight it and win. So, again, everybody in the transaction is subject to getting sued, and then if you're in the transaction as a distributor and you knew or had reason to know that there was a law being broken or something was unsafe, then you're probably not going to get out, and you're certainly not going to settle cheaply.
And can you explain a reason to know real quickly? Because that might be something that distributors don't understand. What does that mean to have reason to know?
Well, reason to know means that maybe the distributor doesn't need to send the product off to a lab and get it tested, but they need to work with companies that do, for example, and they need to understand that some products are higher risk than others, and there should be more attention given to compliance with regulatory standards and safety in general. Again, it's more the supplier and manufacturer's obligation, no doubt, but a little effort on the front end to make sure that you're working with a reputable company, I think is going to be a great insurance policy for a distributor.
Okay. And what can a distributor do to ensure, to sort of get that insurance? It's partnering with reputable suppliers. Is there anything that they can do to ensure that?
Well, I've never felt like there's anything better than a third-party test report that touches on all the proper rules that apply to a particular product. There's just nothing better than that because it's done by a third party, it's scientific, and it addresses the rules of the product. So when in doubt, ask for test reports. We post ours on our website under Safety Search and try to make that available. And you have to consider your customer, too. When you're selling to Disney, for example, their rules are going to be much stricter, and they're probably going to make you get a test report. Test reports are not always perfect, though, because if they're 5 years old and they were done when the rules were different, or they don't test to all the standards, or it's a different supplier today than it was when the test was made, can make that test report obsolete. But a current test report that addresses not only the product, but also the imprint ink. The imprint ink is critical in many situations, especially for lead and other heavy metal testing of imprint ink. So I'm a big proponent of ask for the test report.
One last quick question for you. Where can distributors go to get information from Norwood Big Graphic on eco-friendly products, eco-friendly information in terms of what you have to offer there, and if they have any questions about process or need a, you know, information about labeling, where do they turn?
Well, first of all, our website and our catalog and other marketing materials are going to state what we have determined is the appropriate eco-benefit claim for a particular product. And if there is a question about that, obviously work with your sales rep to gather what information you can on that. Since our suppliers are confidential information to us, we don't always provide affidavits and things of this nature. But I can tell you that the BIC family is not going to allow me to promote an eco-friendly product under their name unless it has been calculated and backed up with documentation. I think a lot has to do with the company you're working with, because that information and the supporting documentation behind that is often considered confidential information. But certainly we'll answer questions and we'll provide everything we can, and normally going through your sales rep to get to the right people here is the best way to go.
Great. All right. Thank you so much, Joe. I appreciate all the information. It was very educational and helpful, I'm certain. And so it looks like we are just about out of time for today. On behalf of Norwood and BIC Graphic and Promo Marketing, I want to thank everybody for attending today's webinar and joining us. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And please also take a few minutes to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next. We're always grateful for your information and feedback, and it helps us to plan for the webinars that we bring to you in the future. And we all hope to see you soon at the next Promo Marketing webinar. Thanks so much for joining us.